Boys in the back. Boys.
What is good? We are back with another episode of the Boys in the Back, this time on a very exciting UFC 321 Fight Week Thursday, October 23rd. I am one third of the Boys in the Back coming in my heavyweight champion gear.
Looking good.
202 on the sleeve there. Let's go. I am Connor Burks, joined alongside me, as always, the man. The myth, the heavyweight champ.
These days, yeah.
Sizing up to the double XL?
Yeah, you know, we'll do the thing.
Mr. New York, right? Frankie, how are we doing back there?
I'm
representing
doing great,
the,
man. Thank you so much for asking.
The final third. I like this. We're back to the shorthanded answers from Frankie. Speaking of shorthanded, right off the bat, we have to say this will be a shorter program today. We have got to go. We have got to leave. We got something big in the works, something planned. You will see down the line. Very exciting stuff. But for that reason, this show today will be shorter. Don't bother with super chats. They will not get answered.
No,
not that short, Frankie. Chill, brother.
Oh,
chill.
All right, my bad.
Super chats will not get answered. We got to bounce. No voicemails, no pound for pound. We're keeping it nice and tight, nice abbreviated. We will keep it just to the 321 preview. Bets, picks, parlay pals. You know we got to throw up another losing four-leg parlay as we do with the parlay pals as of late. And then a fight feast in honor of Tommy Aspinall. Let's dive right into it.
Just one thing. We will make it up to you next week.
Of course.
There will be more voicemails. We'll spend more time. Promise that that whatever the reason that we're doing this will be worth it. But we will make it up to you next week.
It will absolutely be worth it. I cannot wait for this one. This is the hard parenting here. You know, me being like, nope, we're leaving. You're being like, but we're going to make it up to you guys. Let's dive right in. UFC 321 going down this weekend. Tom Aspinall taking on Ciryl Gane in the undisputed. Yes, you heard that right. There's no interim in front of that for this one. Undisputed heavyweight championship of the world. I mean, you see the biases. I mean, right there, Tom Aspinall. You see the shirt. Like, we are a biased program here. I think we openly admit that. I am also a fan of Ciryl Gane, though.
Yeah.
Went to MMA Factory. Out in Paris when I was there, took a picture. I heard them training in the back, but the doors were closed. The gates were down. I didn't want to, you know. Ciryl, you in there, man? Cannot wait for this fight. Unfortunately, it's not the John Jones fight, but I think we've all moved on from that.
Yeah.
I am very much excited to watch Tom Aspinall fight.
For me, I'm happy to see Tom Aspinall back. And you touched on the most important part, undisputed, right? That is the critical factor here.
This
will start the momentum for Tom Aspinall. We'll get into kind of how we see the fight later. But this is the opportunity for Tom to kind of put the John Jones shadow further and further and further behind him. A big win here would allow him to do that. And for Ciryl, probably the last chance, right? Like, he's gotten a few title shots before. This would probably... you know, not certainly, just because heavyweight is an absolute trash division and anybody could get a title shot at this point, but almost certainly going to be the last shot for him to capture UFC gold. So we'll see how it ultimately plays out. But I'm happy that this is happening, because it will put us further and further and further from the John Jones reign.
Yeah, Ciryl Gane on a 2-fight winning streak beat Sergey Spivak and Alexander Volkov in a decision that, you know...
He didn't win that fight.
Personally scored it for Volkov, yep. But alas, Ciryl Gane ends up getting his third shot at undisputed gold. He is 0-2, obviously losses to Francis Ngannou and John Jones. First time we're seeing Tom Aspinall back since July of 2024,
crazy.
UFC 304 in Manchester, and I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it's just like, let's get this division rolling. Let's start getting up some defenses, or maybe we get a new champion if Ciryl Gane's able to pull it off. I'm just excited to see heavyweight rolling again, and there's a few great heavyweight fights on this card as well, which I love to see. Just off rip,
yeah.
I just have to say this before we get into this. I mean, you can see it on the sleeve, the 202,
yep.
In honor of Tom Aspinall having the shortest average fight time in UFC history. Just digging into this, just before we get into anything else, I just have to go over this man's stats.
Please.
And what he puts up.
Yeah.
202, shortest average fight time in UFC history.
Crazy.
Shortest, this is kind of a random one, shortest time in bottom position in UFC history, 1 second. Most knockdowns per 15
wow.
minutes in heavyweight history, 4.09.
Okay. Yep.
That's good enough for second in UFC history.
Wait, sorry. Most knockdowns in heavyweight history already?
No, not total. Most knockdowns per 15 minutes.
Okay, got it.
In heavyweight history, second in UFC history. Most significant strikes landed per minute in heavyweight history, 8.07. That is third in UFC history. Largest striking differential in UFC history, 5.18. So that means he's...
Per minute.
Yeah, outlanding his opposition at the highest clip in UFC history, 3.27 takedowns per 15 minutes, 100% takedown accuracy, 100% takedown defense, and 100% finish rate.
Yeah, nuts. Those are nuts.
He's like a statistical anomaly.
Yeah. Not only that, but when he gets the work, it is done very quickly, right? Like when he is in there, the average fight time, the finish rate, the lack of anybody, 1 second of bottom time, nobody controls him, nobody has success against him, he finishes the fight in 2 minutes and it's over. It really is the you know, it's a cliche, and I believe it's football, but it may have started another sport, but the best defense is a good offense. That's Tom Aspinall, right? You can't mess with this guy because he's going to kill you in 2 minutes. Like, there isn't time for you to be able to do what you need to do. He's a marvel. He truly is like a different breed of fighter from heavyweights we've seen in the past.
We talk about like a Terrence McKinney when he fights.
Yeah.
Who Tom Aspinall shares. Like, Terrence McKinney actually has been to a third round once before, I believe.
Yeah.
Tom Aspinall has never been to a third round, win, lose, or draw. And we talk about anytime Terrence McKinney gets in there, we're just like, oh man, it's the agent of chaos. Hey, you know, this one's going to go short. Bet the under on this one. Tom Aspinall, average fight time, 2 minutes and 2 seconds. Terrence McKinney, average fight time, 2 minutes and 25 seconds.
Yeah.
And it's just like, anytime I think of a Terrence McKinney fight, it ends like that. And Tom Aspinall's are shorter than his.
The thing that makes the Terrence McKinney one more chaotic and interesting is he's also susceptible, right? Even when he's on the losing end, he loses very quickly. The difference here is we have not seen Tom Aspinall suffer defeat other than the injury against Curtis Blaydes, right?
Injury against Curtis Blaydes, which took like 11 seconds.
Yeah.
And then honestly, if you go back in his career, it was the Stuart Austin loss, like in his like fourth professional fight, he got heel hooked. That's really his only real loss.
Yeah, and that's the loss.
A decade ago, very early in his career. The other loss was a John Jones-esque 12-6 illegal elbows, gets DQ'd, gets the loss handed to him.
Yeah. And so the thing with Tom is, it's hard, like, he makes this point a lot. It's hard to really know what Tom Aspinall is because the tape is so limited, right? I think one of the things that's happened to John Jones is, I think John Jones is the GOAT, the best ever, whatever you want to call it. But as time goes on, there's more and more and more and more tape on John Jones to the point that when you get to like a Dominic Reyes, this guy's been able to see years of footage about John Jones and come up with a game plan. For Tom Aspinall, there's not much tape. Like, the tape is basically him blitzing people and killing them. Like, there's not really a lot of tape on Tom Aspinall. It serves him really well because you can game plan, but then what if his jiu-jitsu is as good as we think it is, right? What if his wrestling is better than we think it is? You really don't have a lot of opportunities to find the holes in Tom's game because he hasn't exposed himself in that way yet.
What if he actually has the cardio to go 25 minutes on top of all those things? He actually was asked at the media press conference day out in Abu Dhabi how he plans on winning this fight. And he says, yeah, man, I'm going 25 minutes. We've talked amongst each other. I'm going to switch it up this time, and we're going to go out there and win a boring split decision. He alluded to, you know, he's got one of the best heavyweight teams in all of MMA. He's got a lot of ranked heavyweights in the gym with him. They've decided, him, Andy's been pushing it for a while, his father, Andy Aspinall. He wants to see him go 25, prove he's got the cardio. They've decided, you know, we've showed the danger that we present to everyone. Now it's time to go to 25. He said he's just going to stick behind the jab. So I think we're going to see a different Tom Aspinall here. I think he means that for sure.
For sure, that's exactly what's going to happen. Tom himself, you talked about Andy wanting. Tom himself has literally gone to press conferences and begged for somebody to extend a fight. Like, he wants to show his game. But ultimately what happens is you get in there and Tom is in front of you with the speed, with the power, and he's not giving them an opportunity to extend the fight. That's the problem. He is his own worst enemy. If he truly wants to show off his 25-minute skills, he's his own worst enemy, because once he's in there and he decides to stand in the middle and trade with a guy like Sergei Pavlovich, he wins that exchange, and then there is no opportunity to see more. But it's the blessing and the curse of Tom Aspinall, like, in terms of I don't feel like I fully know about his game. You know, as I said, his only blemish in the UFC is getting injured against Curtis Blaydes. That's the only thing that you can look at and go, okay. And that's an injury, right?
And that fight has also been corrected. They have fought since.
Yeah.
Never forget. I will never forget in the fall of 2023 after, or the fall of 2022 after the injury against Curtis Blades happened, which I believe took 11 seconds. And people were like, yeah. Man, if you go back and watch that, like Curtis looked good in 10 seconds. Like, if you watch that one exchange, like he looked pretty good.
It was 15
good.
Seconds. I'm looking at it.
15 seconds. Like the justification is just like, brother, yeah, it was 15 yeah, seconds. Yeah. Like imagine if he had gotten injured against Sergey after Sergey had kind of caught him in the beginning. And he's like, well, Sergey looked great. It's just like, let's let the fight play out, man. He also, speaking of, you said, you know, extending fights, also extends the arm. He was asked at the media day why he does that. He did it back in cage wars as well.
Yeah.
He's actually, I've done it with him. I've shared the moment of the shoulder
what
extension. They asked, are you getting the reach? Are you checking everything? Because Ciryl Gane was kind of shitting on me. He said, it's just purely, yeah. I'd say it's around 95% romantic. It's just to kind of, you know.
Tom
really gets sensual.
Loose this camp. Tom?
Am I out of place saying it? Am I just biased? It feels like he's like the star of the week.
Oh, he's definitely the star of the week.
Of course, he's the heavyweight champion and everything, but it feels like most of the clips are being generated by him.
Oh, definitely are. There's a lot of big there's a lot of notable names on this card.
Oh, we can get into that. This card is like tailor-made.
This card is very good, but the man of the hour, right, is Tom Aspinall. This is the Aspinall show. Ciryl Gane has a big chance to like upset the apple cart here. But yeah, this is the coronation. This is undisputed. Tom Aspinall is stepping in to finally earn it in the octagon.
He's getting the custom shorts. He's getting the championship treatment.
Yeah, the custom shorts.
Custom shorts, man. I try to be a defender.
Please don't even put up a picture of those pieces of shit.
They, you know, we've seen better. Do we have the picture?
No, I don't want to see it.
My biggest gripe as a Manchester man, as a Manc man, as they say, they pay the homage with the Manchester B, which when you go to Manchester, you see it everywhere. It's like it's the thing there. It's essentially the logo, you know, the logo for the city. You know, hardworking, busy bees over there in Manchester. But then on the other side, they have the London Eye. It's just like if this was a Philly guy.
Have we confirmed it's the London Eye?
I didn't see any Ferris wheels when I was in Manchester. Maybe I'm wrong. Should I Google that?
I don't know.
Manchester Ferris wheel.
That would feel extremely disrespectful.
There's a wheel of Manchester. I'm just, there is no longer a Ferris wheel in Manchester. The wheel of Manchester was dismantled and moved to Edinburgh in April of 2012. So yeah, I think it's the London Eye.
Yeah, that's
if that's the London Eye, it's like imagine if there was a guy from Philly and you had like the Liberty Bell on one side and then you had the Empire State Building
Statue
on the other.
Statue of Liberty on that joint.
If I'm wrong with this, if a true Manc man can explain that to me, someone from the Chester could explain that. Could explain that to me. We'd appreciate a clarification. But yeah, they're not the best.
They're horrible. They're fucking garbage. They're clip art bullshit. Like
shorts. Gold either. Like we can't get shit. Some gold it's on shit. There. Like it feels like there should be gold on every championship shorts. Either way, it does feel like the coronation. But you mentioned Ciryl Gane has a chance to upset the apple cart, man. This is heavyweight MMA. Like anything can happen. Tom Aspinall has looked like a world beater. Ciryl Gane has struggled in these spots when it comes to championship bouts, but he is still a very talented fighter, and it is heavyweight MMA.
Absolutely. My analysis of this fight ultimately comes down to one thing, though, which is what it is heavyweight MMA, and Ciryl Gane has been quite successful operating in this division, but against a fighter the caliber of Tom Aspinall, I think his flaws will be on full display. And his biggest flaw, in my opinion, beyond like, we'll get into the wrestling, which I think is important to address, depending on what game plan Tom Aspinall implements. But the power, the lack of power to me is going to be the death blow for Ciryl Gane. Because if you can't keep Tom Aspinall from advancing, if you can't keep Tom Aspinall from getting into where he wants to be in his positions, if you are in the pocket with Tom Aspinall for any extended period of time, you need to have that power. You need to be Sergey Pavlovich. You need to even be Curtis Blades, right? Curtis Blades is somebody who has that power. Now, granted, I don't think Curtis Blades is half the striker that Ciryl Gane is, especially when it comes to the footwork, the technique, and the things like that, the variety of weapons. But in terms of that sheer power, that heavyweight power, Curtis Blades certainly has that. Ciryl Gane doesn't have that, and that's going to be a major problem for me when it comes to this fight.
Couldn't agree with you more. There's not much for me to add in that sense. It's kind of how I've felt about it since the fight was made, even since the rumblings of it happened. Ciryl Gane is wildly talented. He's a very accomplished striker. He looks good in there. You know, athletic, fast. It's great that we're getting a heavyweight matchup where both guys are like actually in shape. Like it's not like the heavyweight blobs that they throw out there every once in a while. Like two guys that are very athletic, in shape, are going to put on a great fight. But like you said, man, Ciryl Gane has one. Like we talk about Tom Aspinall, 202 average fight time, everything like that. Ciryl Gane has one first round finish in his UFC career, and it came in his debut. He's been to decisions with the likes of Rozenstruik, Taito Iwasa went long. You know, Volkov went to a decision as well. Like he takes time to get going, and it's more of an accumulation of strikes when he does get those finishes. It's not going to be beneficial to him against a guy like Tom Aspinall. I feel like the way for Ciryl Gane to win this fight is to weather the storm that is Tom Aspinall and then essentially hope that like Tom Aspinall's cardio doesn't hold up and he can outpoint him, start accumulating that damage and get the finish. But with the lack of power he presents, I just imagine Tom Aspinall is going to go into the fire and he's going to be like, if that's all you got, man, I'm all good here. Like I'm going to be able to just bum rush you. Or like you said, the wrestling, the grappling, just blast a double leg on this dude and be able to submit him as well.
If you're Ciryl Gane, how do you stop Tom Aspinall from advancing, right? If you're just jabbing, if you're just teeping, that's fine. And you can do that for quite a while.
And if you're Tom Aspinall in the camp with Andy and everyone, how are you not saying, how does this guy stop me from advancing as well?
If you're Tom Aspinall, you bum rush him. And by the way, this is what Tom Aspinall does, right? Tom Aspinall chases that fire. He wants to be in that fire, and he goes into it against guys, as I said, who are more dangerous than Ciryl Gane in that fire. A guy like Sergey Pavlovich, especially at the time that Sergey was operating, was nuking people in that position, and Tom stood and traded with them and got the better of them. So if you're Ciryl, the game plan has to be that movement. It has to be preventing him from getting close, certainly stopping him from getting a takedown. But if you're Tom, if you walk forward, I don't like Ciryl Gane's chances. I like Tom Aspinall's chances a lot more. You mentioned extending the fight, right? You mentioned like we don't know what Tom Aspinall looks like in later rounds, and I've touched on that as well. This has been a common theme to the point that Ciryl Gane actually at the media day talked about taking Tom Aspinall into the quote-unquote deep waters. Here's the quote from Ciryl. If I want, I can also go really fast in the very first round. So saying like, if Tom wants to fight in, you know, quick, I'm willing to do that. Or maybe I go into the deep waters with Tom Aspinall. So he's nodding to the idea of like, look, I can blitz, I can fight quick, I can fight early. If he wants to stand and trade, we could do that. Or I can take him into the deep waters. Tom Aspinall was asked about Ciryl Gane saying that because other opponents have said this before. And Tom had a great response, which was, everybody who said the words, quote, deep waters, gets knocked out in the first minute. Go back and check the tape. So somebody out there should probably put together like a compilation of people saying like, I'm going to take Tom Aspinall into deep waters and then getting obliterated. But I don't know that I believe Ciryl Gane has the capacity to take Tom Aspinall to deep waters, if I'm being honest.
And Tom, like, by the way, that response by Tom Aspinall is brilliant, just because if you go back and watch, I mean, his last three fights has taken a combined 3 minutes and 22 seconds. Like it's
deep waters. That's deep waters for Tom.
But like his ability to mix the martial arts, especially if you want to get going in the first round, like go back and watch the Arlovsky fight. Like the way he finishes that one is like he's just unloading strikes on him. And then Arlovsky goes down and like they're not calling the fight. So he just switches up and just grabs a choke. And it's just done for him. The Volkov fight, my God. Like if you didn't become an Aspinall fan after that with the chance and the main event and getting up on the cage afterward and the way he was just like moving in the matrix and he's switching, changing levels and getting the takedown and he gets a beautiful choke to finish it. Like he is just a complete mixed martial artist that has better finishing capabilities than Ciryl Gane. And I just can't see a world unless he gets caught that Ciryl Gane's able to figure out the puzzle, able to go through the fire, come out the other side and get his hand raised.
Yeah, there's a lot of fights that like, I think are complicated because you don't know where the fights are going to play out and the phases and who's going to be able to be the one pressing the gas and who's going to be on the front foot and all these kind of like different things that come into it. But sometimes there's a fight like this that I feel pretty strongly about where just by approach, I think I know the outcome of the fight already. Now, famous last words, and I can be proven wrong. In fact, one example of this is I felt very strongly that if Alex Pereira just got on the front foot, he'd be able to knock out Magomed Ankalaev. In the first fight, I had some egg on my face because it didn't look that way. In the second fight, we kind of saw what the correction to history happened, and I feel pretty strongly about this fight in the way that if Tom comes out the way Alex Pereira came out against Magomed Ankalaev, who, again, not a lot of power, but craftier, has the cardio to go five rounds. Stylistically, it kind of reminds me of this, except the difference being that Ciryl Gane, I don't think, has nearly anywhere near the grappling of Magomed Ankalaev. But like Magomed Ankalaev, he relies on footwork, movement, being a technical striker. If you don't have something – that Tom Aspinall has to respect, and I don't believe Ciryl Gane does. I think teep kicks and jabs are nice, and I think 1-2s are nice, but I don't think he has anything that Tom Aspinall has to give a lot of respect to. If Tom Aspinall takes the stance that Alex Pereira did, which is I'm going to step forward and I'm going to be in this zone, and if you can hit me, God bless, Tom's going to win that fight every single time. And so I feel pretty confident in Tom winning this fight.
Line curling sits at minus 400, Tom Aspinall, Ciryl Gane plus 300.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
I agree. I favor Tom strongly, but again, it's heavyweight MMA. Anything can happen. So I feel like this line is correct. There is also an argument to be made in the case of Ciryl Gane is that you see some of these guys who are just running through everyone, like a Khamzat, for example. And then when they finally get extended, like the Gilbert Burns fight was the first time we really saw him get extended and get tested. Now, granted, he still won that fight, but it was just like, oh man, this dude isn't completely untouchable.
Yeah.
Now, like, there's a world where, like, you go into a fight and it's just like killing everyone, killing everyone, killing everyone. And then it finally does get extended. Like, sometimes you just can't go
fraud
your
checked,
career.
As they say.
Yeah, I don't know if it's fraud checked. I think it's just like you didn't completely bowl someone
over. No, fraud checked. They're frauds.
Like a freight train. Like, there is a world where, like, say this is entering round four and it's just like, oh, I think it's like, is this 2-1 Ciryl Gane? Like,
yeah.
If it does get extended, like, sometimes, like, the freight train just doesn't roll through the station.
Bad night, whatever it is. Like,
yeah.
As I said, Alex Pereira, bad night, right? Like, against Magomed Ankalaev in that first fight. We know that he's capable of doing what he did in the second fight, but he had a bad night. There's always, look, I was thinking about this recently. MMA is very unique, right? In other sports, specifically the stick and ball sports and all the kind of mainstream sports that we have here in the US, but even soccer and others. Bad night, 2 days later, a day later, a week later, you get to correct the record. You get to come back and show, hey, it was just a bad night. I'm back. I'm still the superstar. For these fighters, for Tom, how many months has it been? What is that?
It's like 15 months.
15 months?
Yeah, we saw him at the end
of July. We haven't seen him in action. You have a bad night, and then you don't get to go for another year, 15 months. That's a rough thing to deal with.
Last time we saw him, I was still in Atlanta. I have moved apartments twice since the last time this dude fought.
Nuts.
The Olympic opening ceremonies was the night before the last time
Hawani
he fought.
Hawani at the Olympics was that long ago.
Yeah, it's been a minute, dude.
Yeah.
It's been a minute.
So my point being, you can't afford to have bad nights in MMA. You just can't. Like, that's how this goes. You have to be on every single night. But there are nights where it just doesn't go your way. And if that happens, I'm not counting Ciryl Gane out from that possibility, right? Anybody can have a bad night. Ciryl's at his best. Tom's at his worst. I think there's a fight to be had. But if a relatively decent version of Tom Aspinall comes, I just think his strengths are so counter to Ciryl's strengths and so counter to Ciryl's weaknesses that I just don't see the path to victory for Ciryl, other than a really bad night by Tom Aspinall.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think at the end of the day, we both heavily favor Tom Aspinall to get it done.
The odds reflect that.
But, you know, there's always the chance.
Yeah.
There's always the chance. Cannot wait for that one. It's going to be great to see Tom back in there. Hopefully this ignites the heavyweight division, at least the top end of it, no matter what the result is. Let's go to the co-main event. Virna Jędrzejczyk sitting atop the corner of this set right here has graced our presence for many, many months. I mean, almost 3 years she's been on now. She earned the honor by walking out to Island Boys.
Yes.
God, that's how long it's been. That trend has been dead for years. Either way, shout out to Virna Jędrzejczyk. She finally gets her shot at Undisputed Gold, taking on Mackenzie Dern. Sort of a circumstantial shot here for Mackenzie Dern. She's on a two-fight winning streak, but she's 2-2 in her last four.
This is only happening because Zhang Weili is going up to challenge
for
the flyweight title.
4-4 in her last eight. She's number five. She has losses to number three and number four and number nine as well.
This is like the Tom Aspinall stats. This is the inverse. You're doing the Mackenzie Dern like low light. Like
she's getting this title shot like circumstantially, and I think she admitted as much in a media day. She's since cleared it up. Essentially, like I wouldn't be ready to fight Zhang Weili just yet. She has cleared that up, but yeah, she's getting this because she's moving up, and Virna and Zhang have essentially cleared the way.
Yeah.
And obviously, she has the star power. Like she garners the most attention at strawweight. She is obviously very skilled. She's on a two-fight winning streak, and you know, that's kind of the name of the game. Like, be available at the right time and like you'll get your shot.
She doesn't have to be like a world beater. She just has to be better than Verna on one night, which I think is completely in the realm of possibility.
For sure. She's already done it once before. This is a rematch.
Yeah. And so like all that other stuff kind of goes away. And like, if I'm Mackenzie Dern, I don't care. I got my shot and I'm going to make the most of it. Like, I kind of like the way, like, just, I like the way Mackenzie kind of handles herself. Like, she's realistic about where she's at. And you mentioned, like, even kind of alluding to the fact, like, I might not be ready for Zhang right now. I'm totally okay with a fighter admitting that. Like, I don't think that's a, some people might look at that and be like, that's a sign of weakness, right? She's not kill or be killed. She doesn't think she can beat the best in the world. Maybe not. But she only in order to be UFC strawweight champion, undisputed, like, there's one belt right now. All you have to do is beat Verna on this one night, and I think she's completely capable of that. So I kind of like, and I've seen some stuff about like, she, you know, the embedded things and people reacting, like, is her eye on the ball? Like, I don't really think that's much of a factor here.
It's the embedded thing. She legit was just like in a jacuzzi.
Yeah.
Like, she said it was recovery. Like, what else is she going to do? Like, how else can you kill your time in Abu Dhabi?
I think maybe too much is being made of that, and too much of the idea of like, she doesn't quote unquote deserve it. She's got one opportunity, and it's against an opponent that I think she's perfectly capable of beating, and we've seen this fight already.
And she is -160 to become the undisputed strawweight champion of the world on Saturday night.
This is where I would push back a little bit. This is where I don't necessarily agree with that line. Like,
I mentioned she's 4-4 in her last eight. She was the favorite in 6 of 8 of those, including several of them being greater than -200 in matches that she ended up losing.
Yeah, if you do look at the body of work, right? Again, as I said, this is one night, one matchup. But if you do look at the body of work, especially the recent body of work, Verna's been very impressive, man. Like, she is the clear-cut, no doubt, number one contender. She would have been next for Zhang Weili, no doubt in my mind. And so I just have to think that in this fight, like, stylistically, I think it's relatively even, right? Maybe you give a slight edge to Mackenzie Dern on the feet just because of the toughness, right? It is extremely hard to get into a brawl with Mackenzie Dern because she's tougher than nearly everybody who's going to be across from her. The striking isn't exactly super technical, but she brings it and she's able to take it. With Verna, it's a little more clunky. It's a little more rudimentary. But when it hits the mat, the one who's more decorated is certainly going to be Mackenzie Dern. But the one who's been more effective in MMA grappling, to me, has been Verna. When you see some of the stuff she does on the ground, especially the scrambles, the transitions, her ability to get to finishing positions, Verna is nasty, man. And I've been kind of like on this train for a while. I've had her pretty highly ranked on my pound for pound, my women's pound for pound for a bit. I think Verna has an advantage here. I'm not surprised by the line because of what I think the attention on Mackenzie Dern is, but I think people are kind of like sleeping and unaware of how good Verna is.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fight that like my brain's kind of in the blender because you mentioned the striking. Neither of them are like incredible at striking. Mackenzie Dern is willing to go in the fire and just let it rip, like toughness on another level. But sometimes that costs her, and sometimes she gets significantly outstruck, and sometimes she gets dropped. Like the Jessica Andrade fight, she got dropped 4 times, got dropped by Amanda Lemos as well. I don't know if Verna poses that threat. Yeah. Like you said, it's sort of, you know, rudimentary on the striking, but where she shines is the wrestling. Mackenzie Dern, a lot of the times, she wants to get it to the mat, but she has like a 15% takedown accuracy. Yeah. But once she does get it to the mat, that's when she shines. But now, like, Verna isn't really the one to you know, knock her on her ass on the feet. But Mackenzie, like, Verna also is not the one that Mackenzie's just going to be able to get to the mat and submit easily. Like, Verna is a decorated BJJ black belt. She has 14 submissions in her own right. She's never been subbed before. You know, I know Mackenzie Dern has some nasty submissions, but, like, up until the Hibas fight, she hadn't gotten a submission in almost 5 years. Over the course of, like, 7 or 8 fights, I don't think Verna is going to end up getting submitted here. I know she's had, like, the Yan Zhao Nan fight. Mackenzie Dern had her in, like, really, really sketchy positions, but she was able to get out of them. I don't think Mackenzie Dern is going to be able to submit Verna. Now it's just, can Verna get her to the mat and be able to inflict damage once there?
Yeah, the MMA grappling for me has been significantly more in the favor of Verna. Like, if we're just looking at, like, what's out there, Verna has been much more effective. And as you said, especially in terms of like dictating the grappling, like identifying where it's going to go and things like that. So I'm not, as I said, I'm not surprised by the line. And I also think Mackenzie, because of how game she is, because of how tough she is, because of the fact that, like, even in bad positions, she tends to find a way, if not to win from that position, but to escape from that position. I really do think that she's going to be live in this fight. But at the moment, I just lean toward Verna. It feels like she has the momentum. She has the path to victory. And if she can kind of just avoid any really huge shots from Mackenzie Dern, I think her grappling is going to be superior.
I'm also going to go with the dog here. I've kind of been a Dern fader like since the Marina Rodriguez fight. That's like 4 years ago. Yeah, just like her performances don't match the way that like the odds are aligned for her. And I always feel like people are just like Dern sub, Dern sub, Dern sub.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's got one.
It's more
sub
like Verna sub, like Verna sub, Verna sub, Verna sub.
So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting fight that like I'm not certain how it's going to play out. Like, are they just going to stay striking? And like, what is that even going to look like? Or is Verna going to be able to have success going back to the wrestling? That's where she's found the success on this five fight win streak.
Yeah, Verna's sneaky. Sometimes she has some success on the feet, but ultimately I don't think over the course of five rounds, it can kind of last. She needs to at some point get it to the mat. And as I said, I think if she does, I do think she's going to be in the advantageous position. So yeah, I lean toward Verna. But it's one of those where if Mackenzie wins this fight, I'm not surprised even a little bit. Like, yeah. this is a completely winnable matchup for her. If it gets into a scramble or if it spends too much time on the feet, there's a real opportunity for Mackenzie here. So I think this is a great matchup for her, where I do think that I give the slight edge to Verna, but this is a great matchup for Mackenzie. You're not going to do better than this. Against Zhang, I'd really be concerned about her chances there. Against Verna, I think this is a completely winnable fight for her.
Yeah, I feel essentially the same way. I'm going Verna, but this is a very close fight that's going to be interesting to watch play out. Let's go to the featured bout of the evening. Umar Nurmagomedov back for the first time since his title fight loss to Mirab Dualashvili, taking on heel? Babyface? Fan favorite?
He said at the media day that the Jose Aldo fans are still on him about that fight and that they're way worse than the Umar fans. So
Mario
he's still the heel.
Mario Bautista is back, putting his 8-fight win streak on the line. Two questions here. Does the winner of this fight get Mirab if he gets past Jan in December?
I think so, yes.
I think it's a clear title shot. I think Bautista is on a 9-fight win streak and he gets past Umar. It's like, bruh, give him the title shot, especially with the way that the division lines up if Mirab's able to get past Jan. And then if it's Umar, the name value, the bounce back. You know,
the first fight.
Yeah, the first fight, you know, he was able to push him 48-47. If he doesn't break the hand, who knows what happens.
Yep.
Second question. Does Mario Bautista actually turn babyface if he's able to give Umar his second loss of the year?
No, I think now it's gotten to the point that people just enjoy the like Jose Aldo ribbing with Mario Bautista. So I think that will continue. We also were secretly last time rooting for him to turn heel and just like really like lean into it and be like heel Bautista. But he's not willing to do that. Naturally, he's just not that guy. He's very nice and respectful. Ultimately, there it is.
I noticed Frank said it before the show, before we went on air. I also noticed Ariel said it yesterday on the air as well.
I'm rubbing off.
I noticed myself saying it in everyday conversation too.
Listen, it's you know,
the ultimately fighting championship.
I don't want to say I'm an influencer, but it's out there. It's on wax.
Ultimately means we're about to get the fight prediction and how you think it's going to play out.
I think Umar's going to be too good. Man, I was so impressed. Like, obviously, Umar's been extremely impressive in the lead up to the Mirab fight, right? Like, he's not really shown much of a holes. Like, he's had some fights where he's been in dangerous positions, but I've never felt like he was really in danger. In the Mirab fight, I was extremely impressed with those early rounds. Like, I was just like, this guy is every bit as good as advertised. I think, you know, we made it very clear that we were shocked by Mirab being an underdog to Umar, and we were riding that. But I think Umar lived up to everything that people expected of him because he had not really faced that level of competition yet, and that was the question mark, right? Can Umar be as good as a Mirab? Can Umar be as good as the guys that are at the upper echelon of this division? To me, in that fight, he proved that he is. I think Mario Bautista has the potential to be up there. I think he can be one of those guys that we consider a top guy, but I think Umar's just a little bit ahead. And when it comes to the grappling, like, there aren't going to be many people on this planet that are going to be better than Umar there.
That loss has aged nicely. Yeah. I mean, like, it's just like 48-47 on two of the judges' scorecards. Was up 2-0 on two of the judges' scorecards. Did have a broken hand. That was confirmed after the fight. And like, he's really the only one to like give the champ a run for his money, man.
You really wonder how that would go, and I think that builds perfectly to if he can clear this obstacle, right? If he can get past Mario Bautista, it's right there for them to do that rematch, and I think Merab wants that as well.
I'm with you, man. I mean, the not only is the grappling and the wrestling great on Umar, the striking is slick,
not bad.
Dude. It's slick, man. I think Mario is, you're going to favor him on putting up more volume, being more active, but in terms of the danger that Umar presents, I like him on the feet there as well, and then when it comes to the grappling, I think he's just going to be able to mix it up too much. I'm going to go Umar by decision and put an end to the Mario Bautista 8-fight win streak. But I think it's closer than like the minus 700 or whatever. Minus 625, Umar Nurmagomedov, plus 475, Bautista. I'm seeing as big as minus 750.
What's always wild to me about Umar is the lines are always like this. But like
the name?
It has to be because he's kind of Merab, right? Like, and we talked about this when we were breaking down Merab versus Umar. I see them as very similar, right? The striking is pretty damn good. It's good enough. The grappling is where they shine. Umar maybe a little bit more control. Merab maybe a little bit more volume. But stylistically, the way they win fights is pressure, 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 and you can't withstand what I'm bringing to you. Merab has been an underdog. Merab is only minus 300, but Umar is in these crazy, like, blown-up lines. I don't get that part, but this is a question that I asked when we were talking about Merab versus Corey Sandhagen. Against a guy like that, against a guy like Merab, against a guy like Umar, is it better to have one-hitter quitter, no doubt I'm going to kill you knockout power and pray for that shot that you probably won't get? Or is it better to be like Mario Bautista or like Corey Sandhagen where I'm good everywhere. I might be great in a few places, but I'm just not good enough in that one area that you're the best in the world, right? And that grappling, Umar is the best in the world. If it's not Merab, or it's one of those two. And so I wonder, we kind of just saw what happened in the Corey fight. I don't imagine it's going to go much differently. I kind of see it playing out the same way. Mario Bautista is extremely well-rounded. He's good everywhere. But if he's not good enough to stop Umar from implementing his game plan, if he can't handle that pressure, what do you have?
Right, he's good everywhere. He's got high fight IQ. You don't go on an 8-fight win streak and, you know, switch up game plans depending on your opponent to not have good fight IQ. But man, yeah, just like you have to imagine also Umar coming off of his first career loss, you have to think that ignited a fire within him.
Yeah. And again, I wonder if he even views it as a loss. I wonder if I don't think he's licking his wounds. I don't think he's going like, I lost to Merab, I'm going to bounce back. I think he's going, if I don't hurt my hand, I'm the UFC champion and I'm coming for it. So that whole team's mentality is different, right? We've seen what the guys from Dagestan are when, like, in terms of that room and how they think about fighting. This to me feels like Mario Bautista is an obstacle that is just in the way of championship, which seemingly would be next for him. So yeah, I expect a extremely motivated Umar, but stylistically, how do you stop Umar?
Yeah, I'm going Umar. I'm going to take him to win. By a unanimous decision, let's keep rolling on the main card. Alexander Volkov versus Jailton Almeida. Volkov fighting on the same card as Ciryl Gane after his questionable loss to him.
He won.
Last time out. I thought he won as well. Mahadinho is back. I posed the same question that I just posed with the last fight. Does the winner of this get the next title shot?
Probably. Right? Like, I think there's some interesting kind of other factors in play, right? Alex Pereira has voiced his desire to go up to heavyweight. Now he has mentioned John Jones specifically by name. But I don't know if that heavyweight Alex Pereira is out there. If I'm Tom Aspinall, I don't know if I don't want to push in that direction. So I think there's other potential things at play. But the most obvious would be the winner of this fight.
I actually believe that Tom was asked about that. I mean, it would make sense. Number two versus number five. Tom's already beat number three and four. If Tom is the next one, I believe we have the quote panel of what he said in regards to this. It's pretty obvious that they're going to do winner versus winner of me and Gane versus winner of Volkov and Almeida. Yeah, I mean, it just makes the most sense.
It makes the most sense. As we have both said multiple times, I thought Volkov beat Ciryl Gane. Are you surprised by the line on this fight?
No.
Interesting. Because I am.
I am a Mojadinho truther. You do know that.
Okay.
Volkov's going to have his patented height and reach advantage. But yes. Does it matter if you're on your back? This is the issue here, is that Volkov, this streak that he's been on, has mostly been against strikers that have given him striking matchups.
Yeah, so the names are Gan, Pavlovich, Tai Tuivasa, all strikers. Romanov, kind of a striker.
He's
a grappler, but he mostly strikes. Yeah. Rosenstrike.
And he loves the wrestling. I think he's on the RAF show this weekend, actually. Romanov, also in the PFL.
Oh, shout out.
He is in the PFL. Gas bag.
Rosenstrike, striker, no doubt. Yeah. And Tom Aspinall, striker, kind of.
Striker that went to the grappling. They utilized the grappling there. I think Curtis Blades landed like 15 takedowns on him. Jailton Almeida is going to go for the takedowns. There is no question. We saw it in the Curtis Blades fight when he got like 10 takedowns in the first round. He will lose committing to the takedown before he doesn't commit to the takedown. Because if it stays standing, if he's like, you know what? I'm going to show off the strike. I'm going to go 15 minutes with an elite kickboxer who has 50 professional MMA fights that has height and reach advantages over me. He's going to get pieced up. He's going to lose this fight. He has to go for the takedowns, and then he has to be vicious once he gets them.
My concern is that. My concern, even if he gets them, is he going to be able to finish Volkov? Is he going to be able to just do what he wants to Volkov? When Almeida is flowing and dominating, he's very good. But when there's a little bit of an obstacle, when there's a little bit of pushback, we see the holes. And a big concern for me is size. You mentioned the height and reach, but just strength, physicality. Volkov is not just long. He is thick. He's a big boy. And so I have concerns about, even if Almeida is able to get him down, what that looks like. Now, Derek Lewis is a fight that comes to mind for me for Almeida.
He held him down for 22 minutes. Because
he just held him.
Yeah.
I do wonder if he was just playing with his food a little bit, or if Derek Lewis is a big, strong guy. And I do wonder if that's kind of the path to victory here for Volkov. Is you have to know he's going to try to take you down, right? On the feet, I think we can agree. This is not a contest. Volkov will piece him up on the feet.
1,000%.
We had him winning a striking battle with Ciryl Gane last fight. And he was on what was his run?
And he danced around Pavlovich. And he did it to Tai Tuivasa. Tai Tuivasa, he beat the brakes off of.
He is a very good striker. I think he's one of the most underrated guys in the UFC. Definitely the most underrated in this division. He knows that Jailton Almeida is going to try to take him down. If he can make life difficult for Jailton Almeida once down there, whether it be getting up, scrambling, just staying safe, I do think he's going to have opportunities, and I do wonder if the game of Jailton starts to just slowly fade and disintegrate. I do think the clearest path to victory is very obviously Jailton Almeida to take him down and make his life hell, sub him, do whatever he can down there. But I am not as sure about it as the line would indicate is where I'm basically at. I think Volkov's pretty live in this fight, especially if he can push it.
Yeah. I can't make an argument against that. He has to be live. On the chance that Jailton Almeida doesn't have success with the takedowns, and if it stays striking, he's going to be out of his depth.
If Almeida comes in weighing, I don't know, what
35 or something.
Yeah, let me look at what his last couple of weights.
But he's been sort of that same weight, and like you said, dude, he was able to take down Derek Lewis. Now he was able to take down Curtis Blades a lot and not be able to do anything with it. And honestly, the finish in that one was weird. He committed to a double leg, had his hands locked, and just let Curtis Blades rain down elbows until he was finished. You have to think, hey, man, let's not do that again if you're in on a takedown and it's not working.
But if you're Volkov, you also have to look at that and go, okay, I have a chance here if I can figure out ways to do that.
Now, I will say, the tide sort of turned similar to Mario Bautista on Jailton Almeida. He was running through everyone, and then he gets the Derek Lewis 25-minute. Everybody's going to hate that and hate you if you go 25 minutes with Derek Lewis and just hug him and just lay on him the entire time. And then sort of the bonehead mental error against Curtis Blades. But he has come back in his last two fights and gotten first-round finishes in both of them.
Yeah, all right, so here are the weights. For the last couple of fights, right?
Okay.
For Volkov, 255, 254.5. I'm just rounding. 258, 263, 258, 256.5. So he's in the 255 to 260 range, right? Almeida, last couple of fights, 235, 241, 241, 236.
So it's going to be like 15 to 20.
You're getting 15, 20 pounds. Like, that's not insignificant.
Yeah, I agree.
Especially for a guy as big and rangy as Volkov. That's my real fear. Ultimately, like, I kind of like a dog play on Volkov because I do think he's live, and I think the line's a little irreflective of that. Like, I don't think it's necessarily accounting for that. But as I said, the simplest path, the most obvious way this fight goes is dump him on his head, sub, and then we're out of here, and Jolten Almeida's onto a title shot.
Yeah, I'm going Jolten. But man, if he doesn't get those takedowns, it's just like, well, he didn't get the takedowns. So he got pieced up.
But even if he, that's my thing, even if he does,
yeah,
it's not always a finish right away.
It's not over. I agree with you. But that is the path to success.
That's the path. Spoiler alert, for the staff picks, I'm going to pick Volkov, but only because I just think this line is off. Like, I think he's being undervalued here, and so I'm just riding with it.
Let's go to the first fight on the main card. Alexander Rakic taking on Azamat Mirzakhanov. Undefeated,
yeah.
Azamat Mirzakhanov. Alexander Rakic trying to avoid a four-fight losing streak. At one point, this was like the next guy at light heavyweight. Now he finds himself winless since 2021. I think this is just going to be a kickboxing match.
Absolutely.
I just can't imagine either of these guys are going to go for takedowns. And with the size advantage that Rakic has, I believe it's going to be 5 inches, 6 inches of height, 7 inches of reach. The experience that he's gone against, like the three-fight losing streak over the span of like 4 years, essentially. You had Jan, which was a 1-1 fight going into round three before the injury. And then the two losses are to Yuri Prochazka and Magomed Ankalaev. And that Magomed Ankalaev fight that took place on the Abu Dhabi card last year was extremely close. 29-28, the razor-thin margins. Like, if you went back and watched the watch party, like, maybe we ended up actually scored it for Rakic. Like, it was a very, very close fight. Whereas Mirzakhanov has not been going against those guys. This is essentially his first ranked opposition. Now, he's got a massive, massive power advantage, I think. Like, I think it's 5 of his last 6 have ended by knockout. Like, he can absolutely put you out. But I think with the size, with the range that Rakic has, back against the wall in a coin flip fight on the odds, I like Alexander Rakic to bounce back.
I like Rakic's chances here. I like his physical gifts. I'm concerned about the power.
Yeah. It's a valid concern.
Rakic has shown to be just defensively irresponsible at certain times. Like, he can be got to, and I think Mirzakhanov is very good at, when he has those opportunities, of closing the door on it, like just shutting that door. This feels like a coin flip fight to me, but if I have to give that 1%, if I'm going 51-49, I lean Mirzakhanov because I think that power is going to be hard for Rakic to avoid for as long as he's going to be in there. But am I going to be shocked if Rakic is able to just stay long, do kind of the things he did against Magomed, right? Like, you stay on those teeps, you keep long, you kind of threaten with power, but then you bounce in and out. I would not be shocked, but I do think there might be a point where Mirzakhanov is able to find that button. And so I lean 51-49 toward Mirzakhanov.
What's funny is that we kind of saw a similar size matchup in the Bakayev-Belgorusi fight. Last week, and obviously it worked out for the dog in that situation. We'll see what happens on Saturday night, but I'm gonna go Rakic to keep the range and bounce back here, avoid the power shot. If he doesn't get knocked out, I think he can easily win a decision.
Oh, for sure. Like, as you said, he's somebody that, like, people have been wanting to kind of like make that run. He's an extremely talented guy. He's technical. He's long. He has all the tools. His problem has been, like, once he's up there, he just falls a little bit short. And also that, as I said, the defensive lapses at times, just being in a, sometimes he enters a range where he shouldn't be. Sometimes he's just a little bit too close on a time that he should have been out. He's in when he should have been out, or he's out when he should have been in. If he can keep it on a perfect night, he's as good as anybody on the feet in this division. So I would not be shocked. I'm going the other way, but just flip a coin on it for me.
I love it. Last two on the main card we are disagreeing on. Let's go to the prelims. Nasrat Haqparast taking on Killing Sal killed. Shout out to that guy a few weeks ago that was dying to know why he wasn't on the press card.
Right.
Now you get him on the Abu Dhabi card. You get him on a pay-per-view in the featured prelim. This is interesting matchmaking to me, man. Sal killed still very early on in his UFC career. 25 years old, only has two fights, and you're going up against the guy in Nasrat, who's on a five-fight win streak, has been in the organization for years now. I think he has 14 UFC fights. He's 10-3 in his last 13. The guys he's losing to are the Bobby Greens, the Dan Hookers, the Drew Dobers of the world.
Yeah.
Man, I just feel like with the run that Nasrat is on, Sal killed getting this essentially on short notice. I know Nasrat as well, but I think that experience plays a massive advantage. And I think he gets it done. I think this is kind of just like a little bit too soon for Sal killed, and the vet gets it done.
I have the exact same take, which is like Nasrat's been fighting a long time in the UFC, longer than like you realize until you look at the record, and the guys he's lost to are the upper echelon of the division at a time like that. And by the way, those are like far back.
That's
now.
Like 2021.
Yeah.
Okay. That's 2021 Bobby Green.
Exactly.
That's 2020 Drew Dober. Like when it was
when
ironclad,
they were peak dangerous,
yeah.
And he was earlier in his career. He's only getting better. I think this is Nasrat's fight to lose.
Yeah. I mean, he's still only 30 years old.
Yeah.
Solid striker. We saw that takedown defense on display against Jared Gordon. This one, I am like a little bit surprised by the odds.
That he's not a bigger favorite.
I haven't placed a wager, but yeah, I mean, it's what, -112 Nasrat, -108 Sal killed.
The Quillen Hive, yo. People asking for when he's coming back.
The scores of Sal killed fans out there supporting their Aussie boy. Let's keep it rolling. My main event of the evening, Ikram Alaskarov taking on the Iron Turtle, baby. I mean, this card is tailor made for us. Alaskarov, 16-2.
Wait, is that your main event of the evening?
I have several main events of the evening.
I feel like there's a few others that might be yours, but anyway.
Ikram Alaskarov, though, 16-2. The two losses, early knockouts. Robert Whittaker, Khamzat Chimaev.
Pretty good. Those are guys
not
are pretty
bad.
Good.
Unfortunately, on Saturday, it becomes 16-3, and the list becomes Khamzat Chimaev, Robert Whittaker, and Junyoung Park, the Iron Turtle, baby. We're going to rely on the cardio. We're going to rely on the pace. We're going to rely on
the
pressure.
I love the we. I'm loving this.
We avoid the big shot. When we get to the wrestling, we get back up. Then we start stuffing the takedowns late. Ikram starts breathing heavy. Junyoung Park's just getting started, baby. He's bloodied up, but he's smiling through it. 29-28, split decision victory. Junyoung Park gets it done. Rounds 2 and 3.
I do think Ikram is going to win this fight, but this does feel like the type of fight where I think Junyoung Park can be dangerous. And like he finds himself in these types of fights where he's going to be able to, I think he's going to be able to keep it closer than people would expect just based on like, Ikram being a 2-1 favorite or whatever he is. So I think he's live here. I think this is the type of fight where maybe he could squeak out that type of decision, but I do favor Ikram to probably get this done.
Ikram -225, Junyoung Park. Yeah. Lines dropping, people. Get in while you can. +190. I took it at +220. Iron Turtle, the people know. That's going to be a good one. Either way, I think it's going to be entertaining. Iron Turtle always
puts on good
fights, and I think Ikram will oblige in that. Let's keep it rolling. Speaking of good fights, speaking of bangers, the ballroom brawler, Mateusz Rombecki, is back this weekend against Ludovic Klein. Go back and watch Rombecki's last three fights. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
He has taken insane damage in the Chris Duncan, in the Oral Bai, and the Diego Fajera fight. Like, dude's just like, let's just scrap, man.
He goes to war.
I'm not going for fight of the night. I'm going for fight of the year, baby.
Yes,
like,
yes.
I'll be damned if I win. I'm just looking for the honors of fight of the year. I think it's going to be fantastic. I don't think, we saw Klein last time out, the win streak gets snapped against Mateusz Gamrot. I don't think Rombecki is going to have the same grappling success. I think Klein sort of stays patient, tries to avoid getting in the brawl that Mateusz is going to go for. And I think Ludovic Klein gets back on track.
If Rombecki can get him into the war, if he can drag him into that, you do have to think the guy who's been in that, like he thrives there. But as you said, like if Klein is able to, like, look, he lost to Mateusz Gamrot. Like we know how good that guy is, right?
There also has to be something to be said. If he loses this one, is it a Mateusz issue? Does he just lose to Mateusz? Is that the issue here?
If you have that first name, we cannot fight.
The Polish is his kryptonite here. I mean, it doesn't make me feel great about Rombecki that 2.5 months ago he was in a war with Chris Duncan. Like,
yeah.
took a lot of damage in that fight.
That's how he fights. That's just what it is. But if he can keep it clean, I favor Klein. Like there's no doubt. But is there a world where Rambechki can drag him into one of these types of wars? I definitely think it's possible. Like Klein's kind of a gamer too. It's not like he's just like this like super finesse type guy. And so I think it's possible, but as you said, like if they're clean, if it's not like a dirty fight, and I don't mean dirty as in like illegal blows, I just mean like grimy type of fight. I like Klein's chances here, but it's almost a coin flip for me.
Man, once we get to this fight, Rambechki Klein, like we're off to the races, man.
Yeah,
the last 8 fights on this card are sick. Like I cannot wait for them.
They're freaky good.
Let's continue on the card though. Abdul Karim Al-Salwadi taking on Matheus Camilo. This is sort of like a, you know, hometown kid in Al-Salwadi. He's from the region. Camilo is early on in his UFC career. They're both kind of getting going. I favor Camilo in it. I think he'll bring a firefight to Al-Salwadi, but like this is one we kind of got to see. We don't really know a ton about these guys.
Yeah, Al-Salwadi losing to Razabanov, like who's
got dropped pretty bad in the first two before getting he had a nice bounce back second round, but got knocked out in the third.
Loic is pretty good. Like yeah. Loic he's pretty good. So again, like don't know much about him, but yeah, I lean Camilo.
Your guy. Valter Vakker.
Shout out.
Taking on Louis Sutherland, who was supposed to fight on that Perth card, ended up getting pulled off. He's making his debut. The great Scott. This is a fantastic personality battle. Go 100%. And watch Red Quarter MMA's piece on Gore MMA in Moscow. It's highlighting Valter Vakker and Bogdan Guskov. Valter Walker's an interesting cat, man. He's just as crazy as Johnny, but he trains in Russia, speaks Russian with like a Portuguese accent. He's a madman. Him and Sutherland, we saw the
announcement video.
Yeah, the announcement video that he put on. Like he's, you know, got traps the size of basketballs.
Yeah.
Like this is a nice personality matchup. I don't know if he's gonna
I like
come
how traps
a,
is his personality.
Yeah, I don't know if he's gonna come with the giant traps. Well, yeah, it's a personality, biting the kangaroo and everything. All for naught. Ended up not being able to fight in Australia, but ultimately, I think this is like a perfect matchup for Valter Vakker to get a fourth straight heel hook. This just feels like a like regional guy making his debut. Like wasn't that great on the regional scene. Now he gets a guy who's on a nice run in the UFC and is unfortunately stopped.
If not a heel hook, it does feel like an opportunity for the grappling game and the submission game of Valter Vakker. It's like the matchup of the false starts, right? Like they were booked, they got canceled, and now they're getting their opportunity. I'm predicting one way traffic for Valter.
Honestly, give Valter Vakker a top 10 opponent if he wins series 15th.
The division is so bad.
Bro, match him up against like Ante Delia or something. Get a top 10, you know, premier matinee fight on an Apex card or something.
Let's do it.
Sign me up. Let's keep rolling. Jose Delgado versus Nathaniel Wood. You know I love a good Nathaniel Wood fight. One of the most aesthetically pleasing fighters on the roster when it comes to the fight itself. The striking is beautiful, technically sound. Delgado, on the other hand, is more of like the danger threat, riding a nasty finish streak. I think it's 7 straight fights for him. He's 2-0 in the UFC. I don't know. I think the veteran prowess of Nathaniel Wood gets it done here, man. I mean, you got him again in this slight underdog spot.
Oh, he's an underdog?
Yeah.
All right, Nathaniel Wood won.
Bro, as a veteran, he's got more UFC fights than Delgado's got professional fights.
Oh,
he's still only 32. Like, he's young in the game. He's won 5 of his last 6. He's in good form. I think the technical advantages of Nathaniel Wood gets this done. I think he outpoints Delgado to a victory, avoids getting starched.
I've always been scared of the Nathaniel Wood underdog because he cashes it. And then the Charrier fight was like my last like time I will ever doubt Nathaniel Wood as a dog.
He's sneaky like one of those like Kevin Holland types. Like I think when he lost in this 5-1 stretch, he was like -400.
Yeah.
It's just like, just give me that like slight dog.
Give me that slight dog, Nathaniel Wood, and we're taking it to the bank.
Oh, baby. And there's nothing better than you got like a nice +140 on Nathaniel Wood. Comes out there, just like putting up volume.
Pop.
Just pop, pop. It's like, man, that jab looks crispy. Jab looks crispy,
maybe,
baby.
Maybe a knockdown around 2, makes it a little like, dicey. Oh,
Come on, just get behind that jab, Nathaniel. Like, you're just watching a technically sound guy who gets it done and puts everything into it. It's fantastic. All right, let's move on to the actual.
Yes.
The main event of the evening.
Yes.
The heavyweight fight we are all talking about, that we are all waiting for. Chris Barnett taking on Hamdi Abdelwahab. We've cleared the charges, the PEDs that's in the past for Hamdi. Chris Barnett,
we're
back after a year off. The scenes last year when he got into the octagon and injured his foot in the pre-fight warm-up just to take on a man 9 inches taller than him was absolute cinema. It was magic. He's back. The man hailing from Athens, Georgia, but also reps Spain in a way. The 5'9 freak. It's Chris Barnett. It's Beast Boy. It's Huggy Bear. How can you not love this guy?
Yeah, he's
Woo! Shout out.
He is a fan favorite. We all love him. He's an all-action fighter. He brings it.
He's got a reach advantage.
I don't know if he's going to win the fight.
Chris Barnett has a reach advantage.
But as respectfully as I can put this, I would not take Hamdi at -400 range.
-400, you're crazy.
Against anybody.
You're crazy.
Against anybody.
If this gets out of the first round, Hamdi's a dead man walk.
Yeah, I can't see a world where Hamdi is -400 against anybody. So I kind of just like think about Chris from that perspective. Yeah, he just can't be -400 or greater against anybody. But man, Chris Barnett, God love him, fan favorite. He has some flaws in the game. Like, there is just a reality about that. But if he comes out there, maybe throw a spinning wheel kick at Hamdi's head, and then you count one, and you just walk off into the sunset.
You know who was -400 against Chris Barnett?
Who?
Jake Collier. Got finished in the second round.
Who else?
Kennedy was like a -700, -900.
He did pretty good.
Ridiculous. Yeah, Martin Budaya also did pretty good.
Listen.
Here's the good news. For the last several years, we're loss, win, loss, win, loss, win.
Oh, it's an alternating.
We're coming off a loss.
Oh, all right.
Beast Boy does not lose two straight.
Get that Beast Boy ticket in.
Except for when he went on a 3-fight losing streak in 2017.
No, but since then, alternating.
Beast Boy, Huggy Bear, Chris Barnett. There's a great video of him. One time he was at UGA, the school that I went to, at a basketball game.
Heard of
it. He was like the celebrity. In the beginning, they were like, UFC fighter Chris Barnett.
That's pretty cool.
And he like led a chant, Go Dogs chant. So yeah, shout out.
I bet that was like one of the more fun ones. He just seems like a fun dude you want to hang around.
Yeah, shout out to him, man.
Yeah, throw a flyer on him. Let's
also,
go.
I say like rep Spain for some reason. He was born in Spain.
Oh, there you go.
So let's just clear that up. Azat Maxim taking on Mitch Raposo is another one, sort of like. Guys early on in their career, someone's got to win. Raposo's 0-2. Azat's 1-2. Raposo lost on Contender Series. Not sure if he's UFC caliber. Feel like Azat just uses the wrestling, but you know.
Yeah. I think Azat's going to win.
Jacqueline Emery taking on Mizuki Inoue. She's back after a 2-year layoff. Yeah, she's got 3 fights in the last 6 years. She's not very active. She's 1-2 in the UFC, and she's taking on a girl in Emery that has been finishing everyone she's fighting. 4 opponents. I mean, even the 4 opponents on this win streak that she all finished have landed a combined 12 strikes against her. And honestly, the Sam Hughes fight, she could be undefeated in the UFC, but, you know, Sam Hughes was able to survive some sketchy situations. I think Emery probably gets it done here.
I love Mizuki. She is sick. She's
16-year-old champion.
She's a great striker. Unfortunately, she's going to get taken down, and that's going to be the end of the fight. But, man, Mizuki's sick. If you go back and watch some Mizuki fights, this is not going to be the one that's going to be the highlight reel, but I'm a fan of Mizuki. I'm happy to see her back.
She's tough, too.
Oh, she's extremely
tough. If she survives,
tough.
You know, maybe she's alive.
Nah, she's going to lose this fight.
That's UFC 321, though, man. This card is stacked. We have the graphics. Did the graphics team put this together? Look at that, man. Tom Aspinall, Virna Jandiroba, 2 title
God
fights.
Damn. Look at Tommy with that belt.
Look at him, baby. Gold gloves that'll be updated to black gloves with the Union Jack shorts. That'll be great stuff. Can we just talk about title fight, then 2 fights with title fight implications.
Yep.
And then you're getting Alexander Rokic versus undefeated Azamat Mirzakhanov. Main card is absolutely stacked. I love the prelims as well. Afternoon card. Main card starts at 2 p.m. Eastern. Like, are you kidding me? And don't forget, Saturday, you'll be with us all afternoon. Look at Walter Walker, man.
Legend.
I'm telling you, go watch that Red Corner MMA. It's on their YouTube channel. Louis Southern not looking quite...
The traps are not as trapping.
As, quite as tough in the UFC pictures. You think they were tested on the regional?
Nah, you know.
That's neither here nor there. I'm looking forward to that one. All right, let's get into bets, parlay picks. I do have one big hitter that I have to shout out as well. The recap, Parlay Pals lost again. We're just on an infinite losing streak. This has got to be the one that we bounce back on.
I feel it. This is the one.
I can feel it in my plums. I can feel it on my plums. Blue shoe, ready at the market. Real ones know. Shout out to Will Ferrell. Let's shout out the big hitter first. We don't need to over our losing slip. The big hitter, unbelievable. Steady Reads X.
What?
On Twitter calls all five first round finishes on last week's card. I just want to get all those because you can't see them in the slip. You can see the Croden fight ended in round three. The Bakoya fight ended in round three. He also called the Drew Dober fight ending in round three. The Bruno Silva Hyunsung Park fight ending in round three. And the Stephanie Luciano Ravina Oliveira fight ending in round three. He goes 5 for 5. And by the way, that all happened on the prelims. That is plus 2,672,903 into 80,190.
Is this like the best ticket we've ever seen?
Second best. Andrew Collins, that we named it after back in the MMA Hour days, hit a $1 to win $427,000.
Holy shit.
That was a 5 for 5 main card exacta round and method parlay.
Oh my God.
And one of them was Alexa Grasso by round 4 submission against Valentina Shevchenko, which was like plus 3,000.
All right. Fair enough. This is second best.
This is unreal. I went on his Twitter and he was just like, I'm just pissed I didn't put $10, which is like the classic thing, but
yeah.
$380,000, man. Call the tax, man. God. Make sure the IRS don't come knocking for that one, because
so,
that's unbelievable.
Just so I understand that ticket, he predicted all of those fights to end in round 3 and they all ended in round 3. That was the ticket.
All ended in round 3, all on the prelims. So by the main card starting, he's up 80K.
Sitting 80K.
Absolutely.
Off $3. Wow.
Absolutely insane. All right.
Congratulations.
Mark, congratulations to Steady Reads X. Parlay Pals, I've already gotten Pete's pick. He's going with the champ, Tom Aspinall. And still, that's what he says. Frankie, you kick us off. Then Rick, then I'll go.
Well, I'm going to kick us off by just asking that.
Yeah, kick us off, man.
Almeida gives us the dub.
Wow, you're saying fuck Rick.
I mean,
you listen to all his analysis and you're like,
I already have this locked in. He made some good points, but this is still my pick.
Okay. All right.
Nah, it's still live. I like it.
Oh, yeah. Now you're next.
Me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Let's try to run back what we did 2 weeks ago. Let's go Walter Walker.
Ah!
Come on.
I'm not going to
get
lie.
It done for me.
I was going to take Walter Walker. Shout out. Legend. Fighting out of Russia. Go watch that.
Fighting out of Russia, yeah.
Go watch that right corner of MMA documentary. It's great. I will go with... you know what? I'm going to go over to the boxing. I'm going to go over to Joseph Parker.
Oh,
fighting at the
O2
this weekend. I'm going to go with an Englishman. I'm going to go. Oh, he's an Aussie. I'm actually going to go with an Aussie in England. Fighting at the O2 against Fabio Wardley. I'm going to take Joseph Parker -400 to get it done.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the program. Shout out to the Big Oose. Is that Australia or is that New Zealand? I always get it mixed up.
I think the Oose is like Samoan, so I think it like is a
shout out to the Anzac.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Shout out to the Anzac.
Pacific
there it
Islands
is.
And stuff.
+197. We're -1.96. We're back in the green with a dub. I can feel it. This is a dub.
This looks pretty good to me.
This is a dub. I know you hate the Gelton one, but
I don't hate it because I think it's the most obvious path to victory. I hate the line.
Mahadinho
I hate the number.
Knows. Mahadinho knows. Shout out to him. That'll go down. You can watch us have reaction to it on the watch party on Saturday, right here, 1:45.
During the daytime
kickoff. You'll be able to see big Empire State behind us on Saturday. Daytime card, my absolute favorites. Let's go to my picks. I've got quite a lot. I always seem to on these Abu Dhabi cards.
Okay.
We started off with Nathaniel Wood. I mean, it's written in stone. If Nathaniel's a dog, I'm sprinkling.
Yeah,
and by sprinkling, I'm making a full wager on the guy. think he just gets it done. Technically sound, outstrikes him, outvolumes him, gets his hand raised by decision, avoids the big shot, ends the Delgado reign of terror. 7 straight wins by finish. We keep it rolling. Mateus Camilo. I like a man, 24 years old. I think he's going to bring the firefight to Al Sawadi. And I don't think Al Sawadi likes the firefight. And I think that's going to be advantageous for him. I'm going to go with him to get it done by finish. We roll along.
Wait, that's a money line.
Yeah.
You're just predicting.
I'm predicting he gets a finish. But at plus 100, I'm just going to take the money line. Ludovic Klein, like I said earlier, I don't think he engages in the brawl that Ronbetsky is going to give him. I think he gets back to the winning ways. Nice win streak before the Gamrot fight. I don't think this Mateus poses the same grappling threat. Klein gets it done. We roll along. I will not explain what is already known. Next.
Love it.
Alexander Rakic as a plus 100 dog. I'm same thing. Avoids the power shot. I've got a few of these guys that could be looking good, and then the next second it's like, well, that's a loser. That could very much happen in this fight, but just with the experience, the size advantage, man, he's going to be much taller. He's going to have a lengthy reach advantage. I think it's just going to be a kickboxing match. If he can just stay at range, I can see him outpointing him and handing Mirzakhanov his first professional loss. We keep rolling. Malhadinho. I got it on this one early. This is one Iron Turtle I took last week. Grapple, bro. Grapple. If we get halfway through round one and he's still striking, I'll rip up the ticket. It's all good. I mean, that's grapple, bro. The path to victory is there. And I know he's going to do it. I know he'll commit to it. He'll get finished on the way to committing to it, as we saw in the Curtis Blaydes fight. Next up.
Positive vibes.
Umar Nurmagomedov. But I'm going to take him by decision. I'm not taking that minus 625. I do think this is a closer fight than that 625 says. I think Mario Bautista is obviously incredibly talented, but I just think Umar, there's just a little too much in the striking, a little too much in the grappling. I think it's probably a 30-27 on maybe two, and then a 29-28 on one. And it's kind of like, oh, Bautista made a good showing of himself, but yeah. Umar was just a little bit too much. We go to the co-main event. All love to Mackenzie Dern. All love to Mackenzie Dern. She'll be a great champion for the strawweight division if she wins. But if you've been following me since 2021, since I joined the program, I think literally like 2 weeks into me joining, it was the Marina Rodriguez Mackenzie Dern main event, and I've been fading Mackenzie Dern since. You're going to keep giving me dog price tags on her opponent. You're going to give me one again on Virna Jandiroba. I'm going to have to take her. That's just the rules. I don't make them. Main event, prop. Aspinall gone. Does not start round three. This is available on DraftKings right now, minus 145. If you saw a Terrence McKinney fight, does not start round three at minus 145, would you take it? Aspinall goes shorter than Terrence McKinney. He is the agent of chaos here. He brings the fight. He dictates where the fight is. He has all the finishing capabilities. And if he gets caught, he gets caught. This would still cash. Aspinall, I don't buy it. I don't think he's actually going to go for a split decision. I don't think he's going to point fight behind the jab. I think he's going to bring the fight to God. I think he can knock him out on the feet. I think he can take it down to the mat, sub him there. Too many ways for him to get this done. Advantageous. Never seen a third round before. I don't think we start on Saturday. Minus 145 on that. I don't want to unload the clip just because I have other Aspinall bets, but minus 145 on that. Let's go to the parlays. This one from a couple weeks ago. Joel Alvarez.
Oh, yeah.
What card was that? Is that Rio? Yeah, I think that was. Yeah. Joel Alvarez from the Rio card with Tom Aspinall. That was a large wager. Got about 300 down on that. Finish it with Tom Aspinall.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, six units.
Six units.
No, yeah, I was fairly confident in that one. Alvarez made it look easy. Hopefully Aspinall does the same on Saturday night. Another one, Amarim. Take it to the mat. Think she gets it done there. Too vicious. Don't love the activity level for Mizuki Inoue.
Yeah.
And then Walter Rocker, same thing. Take it to the mat. Don't love the regional scene action for Louis Sutherland. Think he gets it done. And then one more parlay. I feel confident. Joseph Parker, the big goose. Tom Aspinall, the heavyweights, get it done.
Love that.
On Saturday night. And those are the bets.
You got some hefty action across these.
Yeah, I like to do it on the pay-per-views, and I swear, like the last few years, I really like to do it on the Abu Dhabi cards.
It wouldn't surprise me because they're usually good. They care when they go to those regions. They try to stack them up.
When the fighters are more well-known, when you have more tape, when you have more history on these guys, it's always the pay-per-views. I always do better on the pay-per-views than I do on the fight nights. And when you got guys like this, when you got Iron Turtle fighting, I'm not going to not bet on Iron Turtle.
Oh, Nathaniel Wood Dog?
Nathaniel Wood Dog, in. That's auto.
Walter Walker?
That's auto.
In.
Should we take a Walter Walker?
Fade Mackenzie Dern in.
Fading me, like, there's just some things. There's principles that I live by that I have to continue. I mean, like, Mackenzie Dern, I got to fade her. The rules of engagement here. Those are the bets for UFC 321. That is the preview for a fantastic card come Saturday. The kickoff to three great pay-per-views to end the year. This, 322 and MSG, which is just stacked. And then 323, which is sort of a hardcore delight.
Those two for me are...
Yeah, in terms of like the, you know, bantamweight, flyweight's going, you know, it's not going to be... your boy's not going to be hitting you up like, Pantoja versus Van! But for the hardcore...
But they should be.
That's the one. So a great stretch to end the year in 2025. Before we go... I was going to say me and Frank hopped in the Winnebago and rode around New York and tried the best fish and chips, but he bailed on me not once, but twice.
It was tough.
He bailed on me.
Anything to say for yourself, Frank?
Couldn't make it work.
That was there for one of them.
For one of them. We went to three. We went around town. We tried a touristy spot. We tried a like authentic British scouser behind the counter telling me I had a Man City hat on in honor of Tom Aspinall being like, you got some shit on your hat. And I'm just like, this is exactly what I wanted, man. Thank you. I'll take the fish and chips, please. Really appreciate it. And then we went to like a bougie, like Michelin star chef place that we had to get a reservation for. It was great. We went, we found the best fish and chips in all of New York City. Fight Feast, UFC 321 in honor of Tom Aspinall. Enjoy.
All right, as you can see behind me by the beautiful billboards, we are in the seventh layer of hair, Times Square. The single worst place in all of New York City. As you can see, I've got my Tom Aspinall uniform on, shirt, shorts, hat, Man City. I've seen him wear Man U stuff. That's neither here nor there. He headlines UFC 321 this weekend, trying to defend his heavyweight belt for the very first time. So in honor of him, we're going to try and find the best fish and chips all of New York City. Why are we in Times Square? Our boy, GR, Gordon Ramsay, just opened up a shop around the corner. We're going to go check it out. We're going to go touristy, Gordon Ramsay. We're going to go fancy, a place called Dame. And then we're going to go traditional British chippy, a salt and battery. Fight Feast episode 29, 30, something. I don't fucking know. Let's go. All right, first stop, Gordon Ramsay's fish and chips. When I said stone throws away from Times Square, I'm talking stone's throw. There it is. We are 3 seconds from where we just opened the video. Times Square is right there. This is it. The tourist spot. My expectations are in the absolute gutter for this. This is no better than an Olive Garden or something like this being in Times Square. Let's go get hooked at Gordon Ramsay's. This is exactly what I thought it was going to be. This is like just a dumpy tourist fast food spot.
We got a British flag here. Gordon Ramsay signed off on it.
All right. Gordon Ramsay's fish and chips. We are just mere steps away from Times Square. We are in tourist hell right now. No kidding. We got the Union Jack. We got the Gordon Ramsay. Table a little bit dirty when we walked up. I'm not going to lie. This wasn't my choice. This was Frank's.
Thank you.
Where's Frank? He's nowhere to be found. Bailed on me not once, but twice. We tried twice. He bailed both times. As you can see, we got three pieces of fish. We have got fries. We have got no lemon. Enjoy a nice lemon squeeze. No lemon here at old GR's House of Fish and Chips. We're going packets of malt vinegar, not the classic bottle. Squeeze her out. Gordon starter, made by Gordon Ramsay at some point. Sriracha aioli. Let's give it a go. Looks like a fish stick. Looks like I pulled this out of the freezer. Looks just like a typical fish stick. Here we go. All right, fair play, all my shit talking. It's actually pretty good. It's actually pretty good, I'm not gonna lie. Nice crispiness. Fish tastes good. Fried beautifully. Let's try the sriracha aioli. All right. All right, fair play, Gordon. It's solid. Could have used some lemon, but I mean, it's solid. Let's try the fries. Vinegar, breathe in the vinegar. Coughed all over the mill. Fries are decent. Nothing crazy. Run of the mill potato french fry. With the sriracha aioli, it's pretty good. I don't know what I give this out of 10, but like, I think if I wasn't on Times Square doorstep and it wasn't like a dirty, touristy, like,
nasty restaurant, I would enjoy it a lot more, but taste-wise. Oh, brunch on that fish. Much better than expected. Compliments to you, Gordon. I have to call you because I was hating. I came in here and I was just like, oh, I'm going to fucking hate it. I took a bite of the fish. I couldn't lie. It was pretty good, man. It's pretty fucking good. I'm sad you're missing it, man. I'll save a piece for Monday for you. I'll just put it in my backpack. You can have it on Monday. Okay. All right, see ya. All right. Have a good one. Peace. See that piece of potato fall out of my mouth? Look at Big Gordon. Look at him. Eating the same fish and chips as me. He cooked it just like he cooked mine today. Thanks, Gordon. We love you. I mean, when in Times Square, you gotta enjoy yourself, right? Taking the sights.
Oh, hold on.
We're doing caricature, right? Yeah.
Who is she?
Who is she?
Huh.
That's my cameraman. We call her Nick.
Look at me.
Everybody who walks by looks at it. Paint me like one of your French girls, eh? Not gonna lie, a guy just walked by and was saying that Gordon Ramsay's fish and chips is one of the biggest scams. I hope the mic picked that up.
Done.
What is this? I didn't say shit. This actually looks pretty good. I wanted like a real caricature where I looked like a fucking, where I looked like a dweeb. Am I that buff? Shout out to the Aspinall heavyweight shirt. Gun show really came out. 35?
Frame. 20.
55?
50, 50, everything.
You're crazy. Mm. All right, spot number two, assault and battery, a proper chippy. Is that Australian or is that British? Spot number two, assault and battery, proper chippy, as they say over across the pond. Great name. Actually, a sister restaurant to the place we got the English breakfast earlier this year, Tea and Sympathy. Can't speak highly enough about them, so I got high hopes for this one. Assault and battery. Let's go. All right. That place is proper. Scouser running the counter. Go up there, he's like, you got a bit of shit on your hot lap. I was like, oh, yeah, they got the Arsenal game on. I was like, oh, you're an Arsenal fan? He's like, no, Liverpool. He's like, you don't say. I can't hear the Scouser on you. I haven't ate the fish and chips yet, but got to finish it off with the Maltesers. And a drink, a little Lucozade. Oh, this is Lucozade Energy. So this is sparkling? With caffeine? All right, we're in a race against time. There's a band right behind us that's about to start playing. Can't get over how much I love that place. This thing is absolutely beautiful. Okay, so now we're back to just the one piece. I have to apologize to all Brits out there. There's no lemon in here either. I don't think that's a thing with fish and chips, so that's on me. I'll bite the bullet with that one. Gigantic piece of sprayed everywhere. We just gotta, oh, that's beautiful. Beautiful, nice frying. Let's get a dunk in the tartar sauce. It's hot. It's hot. This is fresh fried. Oh yeah, look at that. Gordon Ramsay's was good. This is like going from a McDonald's cheeseburger to a professionally made burger. This is fantastic. It's so hot. It's so hot. Chips to try? Oh, these chips were made to have vinegar dunked all over them. These are fantastic. All together, this is shitting on Gordon Ramsay's. I'm tripping. I don't even know what to do with this. I should have gotten a fork. Look at that fish though, beautiful white fish, fried to perfection. Also, their tartar sauce is fantastic. I'm not gonna lie, it's so hot, man. I cannot eat it. I'm racing against the drummer behind me who's about to start playing. Holy shit, it's hot. Why'd I get the large? I've already had like 6 cods worth of fish today and I got the large. Skirplunk. So comparing place to place, when we go Assault and Battery to Gordon Ramsay's, atmosphere in Assault and Battery was on 10. Tiny, tiny place. Scouser behind the counter. He was giving me one of those, you know? Talking shit to me about the Man City hat. Clean. It just felt like you were taking a trip over to England. No question, Assault and Battery over Gordon Ramsay. We'll find out with Dane, the power of production. We'll go to our third and final place, which is so fancy and so special. We had to get a reservation on a separate day and do that. So let's jump to that nighttime. We'll play Dane. and then I'll come back with my final rankings.
Spot number, I don't know, because this is a different day. Look at how dark it is outside. We had to make a special reservation for this place. Dame, Michelin star chef. This is the fancy spot. We're doing the touristy spot. We're doing the British spot. Now we're doing the fancy spot. Dame, if you get a party of more than six, you got to rent the whole restaurant out. Very small, tight quarters, fresh caught fish. I don't know what spot this is. It's Wednesday. We're recording the rest on Saturday.
All right, as flaky as it gets, just breaks apart on you. Piping hot, freshly fried, big dunk of tartar sauce. Mouth is scorched, lava hot. Terrible move, I should have let it cool down. I don't even know if I can get him an honest rating at this point. Lava hot. Fair play to him. This is the first restaurant we went to. We had to get a special reservation. I don't know how anything's stopping this. Let's try the chips, the fries. A little garlic aioli. I want to see any Brit come over here and tell me that this is not good. It falls apart. I mean, I'm talking as flaky as flake gets. You'd think it was a snowstorm in here, the amount of flakes that are going on. Look at that. Fresh out the fryer. You can see the steam coming out of it. I don't know if you can see it on camera, but. $30 for a piece of fish and some fries, it better be worth it. This is worth it. The fries are crispy. If the music wasn't playing, we'd be getting a crunch. I'm no fish and chips expert, but this is top notch. Look at it falling apart in my hand. Is fish and chips a fork food? I guess we're gonna learn along the way.
Only way to finish a British meal with some Maltese is straight in the... Overall, successful day. Got a beautiful, accurate portrait done of myself. Rankings, though. That's why we're all here. Number three, no questions asked. Gordon Ramsay. Not even close. Bottom of the barrel. The fish stick itself was decent. I'm doing you a disservice, Gordon. The fish itself was pretty good. Fries were ass. Atmosphere was ass. Number two. Drum roll, please, because that gives us our number one. Dame. It was fantastic. Done. Top of the line. Fancy chef. You got to get reservations. It's a beautiful restaurant. Blah, blah, blah. Fish was fantastic. The chips were good. But there's something about that salt and battery. The way that the chippy is set up. I'm really hoping that's what people call them over there, because I've been saying it throughout this entire video. The way the shop's set up. The scouts are behind the counter. The fish itself, beautiful battering, beautiful fish, beautiful tartar sauce. It's unbeatable. It felt like the real experience. Best fish and chips in New York City. Stamp it. A salt and battery.
UFC 221 this weekend. Tom Aspinall, Cyril Gane. And still, I'm out.
All right, that was Fight Feast. I feel confident in my ranking system. I feel quite good about it. Sneaky learned, like, kind of love fish and chips. Like, fish and chips is a solid meal.
It's a solid. It's a reliable.
What'd you know about it, Frank?
Oh. I went to the best one, in my opinion. So
in your opinion, but you only went to one. So how could you?
Because
have
after
another
I had
opinion?
It, I was like, I'm done.
I mean, you saw it in the video, but like there's something about getting yelled at by a scouser as you order your fish and chips that just brings it out of you. And then you finish it with some Maltesers. That was fantastic. Shout out to the fish and chips. Shout out to Tom Aspinall. Shout out to UFC 321. Like I said at the top of the show, shorter for today. We got to go because we got something big planned. We got to run. We got to skate. We got to go do something. Don't be mad at us now. We'll make up for it next week on the Halloween episode. We got some great costumes planned. We'll do pound for pound. We'll do super chats. We'll do voicemails. We'll do it all. But I promise, us leaving early is going to be worth it. I can guarantee that when the payoff happens. Thank you so much for tuning in. Enjoy the fights this weekend. The card is absolutely stacked. You got boxing as well. Make sure you're right here. 1:45 Eastern, UFC 321 watch party. Watch the crack tomorrow. Back on Monday, Helwani show. Big post pay-per-view Monday in store. I can guarantee it. Appreciate you watching. Till Saturday. Peace.